was that Moshe transmitted to the Jews after Kabbalah of Torah and Sinai was Mishpat. Laws of justice, governing relations between men and men. Let's go through the parsha. The parsha is in Mishnah, Parashat Kabbalah. Kisikna Evidivri, if you shall purchase, literally, would be evidently to be translated as a slave. In this case, it's not a slave. The better term would be a servant, even though that's not the greatest thing. Okay? If it's Jewish, purchased as opposed to another kind. There is an institution of abdur, of slavery, with regard to Gentiles, which we're not taking up today. It's not to be confused with Israel. This is more of an economic arrangement. And there are very strict laws governing how the master is to treat the other.
Yes.
I will get into that. There are two ways in which one could become an Eved Ivri.
One way is if he is sold by the
Bezdin can sell him as an Eved Ivri,
and that is for one time
only, for commission of one time. What? Anybody know what that is?
If a person steals money,
what's the penalty? What's the punishment in the Jewish system?
Well, it all depends. Okay,
it gets complicated. Yeah, but let's say you just steal some money.
Let's keep things. I like to keep things simple. Let's say an ordinary case of stealing.
No, that's a garnish. Not a case of
stealing. Unless you confess it, but that's a canard.
Careful would be twice the amount. It pays the principal plus
a fine.
But that is in the framework of a fine, and no of a class cover. When it confesses,
the only time you say that class is if he was
convicted because of testimony, but had not confessed.
Essentially, however, if he
is a charge, if a person steals, there's really no punishment in the ordinary sense. He doesn't go to jail or anything like that. If a person steals, then he's obligated to repay.
And when he decides
to be tshuva, he confesses, and he repays, and then you're in the earth.
Of course, tshuva would require more, by the way.
It's important to realize that when a person
has sinned against
a fellow Jew, monetarily, has sinned. Not just if you're
out, that's something else.
Because you borrowed and didn't pay back, well, that's not a sin, you have to pay back. But if a person cheated somebody else
out of money,
committing an error. So you have two things. You owe the person money.
Secondarily,
you have to do tshuva. And part of the tshuva is to be a rock at a person, to talk about, to apologize, and to get the person to accept your apology. That's part of the tshuva process.
Not going to take it up either.
So the person stole and was caught.
So what's the punishment?
You have to pay back. That's basically it. If it's a situation of kefal,
then there's not every case to be kefal.
He has to pay the kefal.
However,
if he's stolen and he cannot pay back, then Bezdin can sell him as an Eved Ivri to get the money back. Bezdin can sell him as an Eved Ivri.
So now you have this new institution of Eved Ivri.
It's a very interesting kind of a thing. The Gemara in Kedushin discusses many different aspects about it. I'll just give it to you in a general sense. It's not obvious
in the way you would think about it.
Because when we think about slavery, we think about the oppression of the blacks and so forth, or what the Jews went through in history or in Egypt. That's not the type of thing it is.
He has got to be extremely,
extremely solicitous of the feelings and the conditions of the other. He has to treat him in terms of lifestyle. He has to treat him on the same lifestyle as his own. He has to feed him the same type of food.
And
he's not permitted to afflict him with labor, with back-breaking type of labor, or any kind of undignified kind of labor. So the Torah was extremely careful about limiting the pay. He doesn't own him like an Eved. It's a monetary arrangement. He works for him, but the master has to be extremely careful as to what he does. In fact, it's an interesting shiloh. Let's say
the Gemara has this question.
If there's only one pillow available,
who goes to sleep on the pillow?
Whoever gets to sleep on it because
and he is not allowed to afflict him. Now, affliction would mean to give him inferior conditions to what he has.
See? So now,
if he sleeps on the pillow, then the other is sleeping without a pillow, so the other is afflicting the other, he has inferior conditions. So therefore, he has no choice.
So the other sleeps on it,
because the Eved is not in anybody. The Eved doesn't have any obligation towards the master in that respect. So therefore, the Chazal say, having studied all the rules and regulations that apply, they therefore said, Kolakona Eved Ivri, whoever purchases an Eved Ivri, is Kekona Adon Liatma. But he purchased a master. He becomes basically subservient. That's how careful, solicitous the Torah was for the welfare of the Eved. That's just background. Second way in which a person, this is important for the Shir. The second way in which a person can become an Eved is if he became impoverished and he can sell himself. Alright? So one way is through he stole and he can't pay that. Can't get the money back. And secondarily, the other way is if he's impoverished, he can't get by. The essential philosophy underlying the institution. Now, he says in the Eved Ivri, if you purchase an Eved Ivri, Sheishanam Yavo, you work for 6 years. Uvashviyas, and on the 7th year, Yetev Lachavshi Hinam. He goes out free, a free person. Now, according to Rashi, this parasha is talking about a case where he was sold by the Bezin because he had stolen and could not pay back. It's not talking, there's another parasha in the Torah which is talking about the individual who sold himself. Now it teaches us some of the principles, and there's some very fascinating principles over here. In Begapo Yevo, Begapo Yevo, famous quote, right? He comes in alone, he goes out alone. In Baal Ishavu, when he came in, when he became an Eved, he was single, did not have a wife. If, however, he has a wife, someone who has a wife could be sold as an Eved Ivri, the Yosa Ishto Imo, his wife goes out with him. Now, here again is a classical example of where the pasuk itself cries out for explanation. What are you talking about? What do you mean? Exactly what Rashi said. Rashi asked that question. Who brought her in that she's going out? So how did she become a servant or a slave, whatever the case may be? Ela magid akasiv, but the Torah is teaching us shakona eved ivri, that one who purchases an eved ivri, chayev bin zonos ishta uvanav. He's now chayev to support. He takes over the obligation of the husband, because the obligation of the husband is to support his wife and children. But now he's no longer an independent. He's working for the master. Now the master is part of his obligation, but you can see why. Because it's not a one-sided affair over there. There's a big responsibility. Yeah, why would everybody want? But, nevertheless, it makes sense. Who's to take care? You know, you see the justice of the system. This individual has to pay back. He committed a crime. And the Torah has provided a mechanism. But in doing so, the Torah did not forget about the others that are involved. We don't want, what's going to happen to the wife and children? Like in our society, the guy's carted off to jail. I'm not criticizing him. This is not a Torah society. No, this is not a Torah society. But you see the limitations on justice. We don't think along those lines. And I'm not saying that we should, because there are people out there that have to be off the street. But nevertheless, what happens to the children? What happens to the wives? What happens to the so-called innocent party? All right. But the Torah did care about that. Now, so the wife goes out too, which means to say it goes out from what? Goes out from the... She's not... No. She goes out from her rights. The master, he's no longer responsible. That's it. Now, when the Eved goes free, so the master is no longer obligated to take care of the family. If I don't know if he's in Loisha,
If the, now this is the part that I wanted to concentrate on. This is very, very fascinating. If the master is given more, the master has some rights also over here. It's not entirely one side. Okay. Something very, very, the Ad Kan, until this point, it makes sense, and it's, we can understand it. The necessity for such a thing, for such a situation, it's not a terrible thing. He's working, it's a working arrangement. But now the Torah is coming with something which is totally unexpected, out of nowhere. If the master give him a what? Master can give him a wife. What are we talking about? He's married. The older Lovanim, and this wife bears children for him. Ovanos, his sons are good. For Isha Viladeh, the wife and the children, Tia Ladonah, belong to her master. This is the master key. This is after the Sakir. We're talking about when he's gone free. Ruyete Bagapa. He goes out alone. Doesn't take him with him. Now, what is this talking about? What is this talking about? How can somebody give somebody a wife in terms of in Yahadis? Where is my situation? Alright, so, yes. Shivcha Kananis. Here's the case. I mentioned before that there is such a thing as a Gentile slave. Jews were permitted to own slaves. Alright, there's a purpose for that too. There's a purpose for that, and it's not what you think it is. And it's a humane, obviously, a humane institution. There's no need to say that. But I'm not going into particularities right now. This individual owns a Gentile slave, a woman. That's called a shifcha. Shifcha Kananis. Now, a shifcha Kananis is basically a Gentile. And therefore, she is prohibited. A Jew is not allowed to marry her, obviously. And nor is a Jew permitted to live with her, to have sexual relations with a shifcha. Exactly. This is not talking about a Jewish woman. He can't give him a Jewish woman. And certainly if he did, then the children wouldn't belong. It is his shifcha. And he may give the shifcha to the Eved for the purpose of having children. And now he has, and these children, the Lord, they're slaves. Because the child of a slave is a slave. And this is more like property, belongs to him. So that's what the Torah is teaching you over here. Now the implication, as Rashi points out, you have to keep in mind all the facts over here. In Begapo Yev, Begapo Yetzer. You come in alone, you go out alone. Which means the implication is that he cannot give the shifcha to this Eved if he is unmarried at the time. I guess maybe the opposite of what you've expected. Let me get it straight. If this Eved is unmarried when he comes in, then he cannot be given a wife. Now, clear, there is a right of the master to give the Eved a shifcha for a wife. The children, but that is on the condition that he already has a wife to begin with. Yes. That's why the Chazal say that the Eved Ivri works by day and by night. By day he does work with the work for the man. By night he works by producing children.
And his wife is
He can give him a wife, but only if he already has a wife. If he does not have a wife, then he can't give him a wife. So we have to understand what the reason for that is. But there's a bigger problem than that. One second. There are bigger questions. The Imam Yomar Eved, if the Eved proclaims, now this is at the end of 6 years. Something may happen over here that the Torah didn't, the Torah of course anticipates, but it's not that which the Torah really desires. The Torah wants him to go home. But if the Eved should say, Ahavti es Adoni, I love my master, interesting. You wouldn't expect such, but you see the benevolence of the institution, that the Torah was really concerned. It's been set up in such a way that he's going to really like his master. As Ishti, he likes his wife. He has Banai. Lovei Techavshi. Yeah, Lovei Techavshi. I know, he has another wife outside. What's happening over here is that he's saying he likes his mess. He likes the situation. Ishti means this wife. It doesn't mean he doesn't like the other wife, but he likes this wife too. He has Banai. He likes his children. Lovei Techavshi. I don't want to go free. So now, the Torah has created some kind of a situation in which it's very possible that he won't want to leave. It's obvious the desire of the Torah is that he should be an eved for 6 years and then leave. You see that from the next pasuk. Why? If that's the case, then the master brings him to Bezdin. Over here, the Elohim is a reference to Bezdin, he's not God. The Gisho Aladelos or Alamzuzah, they bring him to the doorpost by the mezuzah. And then they pierce his ear against the door. They pierce his ear. Vavado Yolam, and he works for him forever. But forever means until Yovel. Forever does not mean literally forever. It means until Yovel, which would be the Jubilee year. And then he goes through. And there are many, many questions. It seems to be, because the Torah seems to be a bit ambivalent about the entire situation. On the one hand, it has created the institution of enslavement, so to speak, because this person, it seems to be ambivalent. On the one hand, the Torah has created the institution. On the other hand, the Torah is condemning the person. He's being condemned over here, and he's having his ears pierced. Now, what is the significance of having the ear pierced? Now, exactly how Rashi points out, that this person became an eved because he stole. So the ear which heard on Har Sinai, you shouldn't steal. This ear went, heard it, nevertheless he went out and stole. Let that ear be pierced. Very good question. If that's the case, you're right. If that is the case, if that's the punishment for stealing, because he didn't listen to Lotigno, then it should be right away.
That's
the punishment. It's becoming the Eved. So if that's the case, So then if it's the punishment for continuing as an Eved, then that's what Rashi said. Rashi did not say that. Rashi said that it's because of the punishment for the sin of stealing. Then he should have said that it's really for extending something which the Torah didn't want to extend it. Secondarily, the Rashi asked, what about in the case where he sold himself because of poverty? In that case, he didn't steal. Then, Rashi quotes another, a reason is given for that case as well. Because the ear, wasn't listening to carefully. That was in when God skipped over the house of the Jews in Mitzrayim and said, Avadayim, Avad they are my Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim. For the Jews shall be avadim unto me. Avad dayhem, they are my servants. Lo avadim avadim, they're not servants. That wasn't my purpose. I didn't take them out of Egypt in order for them to be slaves, to find another master. That's the reason for that case. Of course, that too is problematical. That too is problematical for a number of reasons. What's the problem with that? What's the And ask, right, with regard to everything we're saying, the Torah seems to be to view this institution as being a negative one. In fact, that's why if he seeks to extend it, right, then he can do so reluctantly. But then he has to have his ear pierced. Why his ear isn't pierced to begin with, we can explain. But now he's deserving of punishment because he's extending clearly in the case where he has sold himself, the reason for it, the reason for the piercing is for the fact that he's allowing himself to be. For allowing himself to be an Eved, to be an Eved of Reed. But one second. So if that's the case, if there's something wrong with that, we have, first of all, the two questions. Where's the conflict? As we have learned, the master, the Adam, cannot afflict him, cannot prevent him from doing this, folks. He has to do all the mitzvot. That's an Eved Kanani. Of course. Being an Eved Ivri, he is an Eved. He is an Eved Hashem. He's not allowed to interfere with his religious obligations. He has to put on tefillin, he has to daven, he has to do everything. Do it all. You're talking about the Eved Kanani. The Eved Ivri, even in the state of obviously, said he has a very comfortable situation. It couldn't be that bad if he's going to say, I like my situation, I don't want to leave it. But certainly he has to do the mitzvot. So, well, he doesn't have any money on the outside either. His partner. That is another gift to Dukkah. I mean, you know, that's something. No, that's not it, though. But certainly what you're saying is not what the rabbi is saying, it's not what Chazal is saying. It's a violation of your relationship to God. Well, first of all, I don't understand how it's a violation of your relationship to God, because the term is being used in two different senses. The sense in which I am an Eved to the Adon is an economic situation. I'm working for him. But everybody's working for somebody. Right? That doesn't mean I'm not a servant of God. Okay, you have to understand. Also, okay, fine. I just want you to understand
it's
it.
Part of the two process, so we can never get back and
Okay. But the Torah did allow it. That's the first issue. But in addition to that, you have to ask the question that with regard to Gneiva, Lo Tigno, there he's being punished for the crime of Lo Tigno. Right? Because the ear which heard God proclaim. So if that's the case, every time a person commits an avera, he should have his ear pierced, because of his, whatever it was, the person ate trade. Well, with the ear which heard, you shouldn't eat trade. The ear which heard, you shouldn't, right? Isn't that a good question? It seems to me, what difference? Why this thing? Why is this thing? Excuse me, everything is from Sinai. That you should realize. All the Tariyat mitzvahs are from Sinai. So, if you're going to tell me that when a person sins, he should have his ear pierced because he wasn't listening properly, that's the idea I can accept. But why this particular? That should be any time a person commits any other error. His ear should be pierced because he wasn't listening too carefully to that particular minute. That seems to me to be completely out of left field. It doesn't fit into the entire picture. I can understand the need for the institution. I can also understand the fact that the Torah is ambivalent about it. There are certain institutions in the Torah that there has to be ambivalency. You see this with regard to the institution of Malchus itself, of having a kingship. The Torah is very ambivalent about that. Because on the one hand, it's impossible. Man requires government. There must be control. There must be rule. On the other hand, once you set up a king, once you set up a source of power, you're establishing the possibility of corruption and destruction, in fact, and therefore this is what the Torah is going to do. So the Torah did enable us to have such an institution. Some custom alach ha-melach gave us the right to establish a king, but placed tremendous safeguards and delimitations that he can't amass tremendous wealth, and he must have a special safer Torah that he carries around with him to study the Torah all the time. He can't go back to Egypt in pursuit of these beautiful horses and so on and so forth. All of this is done to delimit, to prevent the possibility of corruption, because his heart is the heart of all Israel, the Rambam says. If he's corrupted, the whole... And the truth of the matter is that in our history, the entire destruction of the Bais Rishon, all of the first exile was caused because of the corruption of the kingship. That's the whole story. If you say, he reads Tanakh, then he'll be shown. So, what are you going to do? God gave us free will. You do have in the Torah the phenomenon where the Torah will permit something and do it in such a way to discourage you, or to be limited. This is not identical. There is a need for the institution of Eved Ivri, because sometimes a person's in a situation where he's reached such a level where he can't function on his own, he has to have this type of a secured situation. If you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, by the way. Because why does this person fall into the situation? We're not talking about the type of thief we read about in the paper today, where he comes to the house and beats somebody, kills and shoots him. That's not the guy. This is not a violent criminal. This is someone who is brought to this because of poverty, because he can't make it on his own. He's lacking something in terms of his development. He couldn't make it on his own, so he stole out of desperation. So the best thing for the individual is to have an opportunity to work it back, to make it back by having a, but he can't find a job on his own. He needs a controlled situation of security. So it's sort of within that he has responsibility, but he can't have too much responsibility to the extent where he has to stand independently. So therefore it's a compromised situation. He has the security of knowing that he can rely on the master. At the same time, he has the obligation to realize that he has to earn his own keep in that situation. So I believe that the entire point was to give him a situation in which to mature, in which to develop. Now that he sees that he can function, you see, he's too scared to go out there in the world. Sometimes you find this very often, that people have tremendous talents, and they can make it, but they're insecure. So they're afraid. They're all their life they wanted to be something, and they're always afraid of failure. So finally, somehow, whatever, they got pushed into a situation, and they were forced to do it, and then they discovered they were able to do it, and they succeeded. And that from that point on, they were able to function. So that's what this person needs. So the Torah wants it to rehabilitate the person. Jail don't rehabilitate the person. They just make him even angrier. And to just leave him on the streets with nothing, here he can acquire a skill. He's got him, by the way, this master is an individual who's an accomplished person, otherwise he couldn't afford it, obviously. He's got to be a person of means, and he needs it. He needs servants. So he's a benevolent individual. He takes him under his tutelage, and he'll teach him certain things about how to make money, how to manage things, how to be responsible. It is intended to be an opportunity for rehabilitation. And that's why the Torah says after 6 years, go touch him in. That's why he's not had the ear pierced at that point. Because then it would mean he had a defect, but it wasn't of a permanent nature. It is something which he was able to overcome. But the natural desire of every individual should be to obtain independence, not to be dependent upon another human being. That takes away from the relationship to God. That's why it's about dying, to leave an Israel love on him. That on the ultimate level, if a person is looking for some source of security, that's what everybody's looking for in life. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's why we have tefillah. That's why we have tefillah. And tefillah, excuse me, is based upon your essential desire for security. And all the tefillahs encourage you, ask for everything that you want to say. Ask for whatever you want. Say you're praying to God just because you want certain things for yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. Because the desire for security itself, there's nothing wrong with it. It is the mistake people make is who they turn to satisfy that emotion. And most people turn to man. They turn to other humans. They're looking for that human image. Everybody's looking out there for that wealthy person, for that powerful person, for that organization. If I can only get part of that organization, all my troubles will be. That is taking away from your dependency on God. Because you've now directed those emotions, which should be directed towards God, you're directing it onto something physical, something created, something human, something which is itself insecure and a weak being. That takes away from God. So therefore, it's only after 6 years when we discover that this person cannot cure himself of this defect, well, then we have no choice. He can't make it out there. It's better. He's certainly better off being in this control situation. But then he has to have the ear pierced, because that must be reminded him that he partakes of this defect in a serious way, and that he'll always have to work on it. He should work on it. See, that's why the piercing of the ear is really relating back to the original defect which this person had, which led him into that situation. However, at that point, the possibility was that it was of a person. He didn't have he had to go through a maturational process, which he did not go through at the proper time. We see that happening all the time today. So even later on in life, a person can mature, hopefully. If you put him in the right situation, people will develop skills that they could have developed maybe 15 years ago, but they didn't have the right opportunity. Okay. The question that I'm dealing with actually I had given over a lot of the ideas on a sheer a number of years ago on a tape, in the Yeshiva tape library. And one of my students was in Florida, was giving it over to his class. So he called me up to discuss certain points and certain questions. And he asked me about this. What is the purpose? What is the reason for giving over what's the philosophy behind that? Why the Torah allowed the master to give over the wife? And I started to answer, you know, like the first thing that comes to mind. And I wasn't satisfied with the answer, but I wasn't satisfied with the answer. I said, first thing, oh yeah, here, no, the question is like this, is that why is it, if he can give over, he has the right to give over the shivcha for a wife, so why does it have to do with that fact that it's only if he's married already? Let's get back to that. But if he's unmarried, then he can't. What's the reason for that? I mean, he should be either or. Oh. So I said, that I can understand. I said, because you see that it's the objective of the Torah is that this should be a temporary situation, and that we want him to leave the situation at the end of 6 years. So we do not want to create any extraneous factors that would cause any attachment. So if he already has a wife and a relationship to that, so then the relationship with the shifra will not be an emotional one. He won't establish a deep attachment to her. So there is, therefore, you'll be able to have the marriage and the children, but then at the end of 6 years, he'll want to go back to his wife, back to his family. But if he came in single, he does not have a wife, doesn't have a family, so then this will take on a whole new character. Then he'll view her as being his essential wife, and all the emotions, the attachment, and then he'll want to stay. But the objective of the Torah was to get him to leave. Well, at least he has a wife. All he needs is a wife. If he has a wife, so in his own mind, that is the person to whom he's attached. That's the relationship. He wants to go back to her. So he'll look at this in a totally different light. He won't get emotionally involved. I thought that was a good answer to that question. But then I'm talking and saying, but if that's the case, if the Torah is concerned that he may get attached, and in fact, what happens when after 6 years to the person, in spite of everything, I like my wife, and even though he had a wife already, it didn't work. I like my wife, I like my children. So then I say, but what about it, like, you know, we're anticipating what the students might ask. So what if somebody asks you, if that's the case, then the Torah should have not allowed the master to give him wife altogether? What's the need for the whole thing? What's the reason behind it? Right? That's the case. We don't understand this at all. Why should he be able to do it? What's the benefit? What's the purpose? And why create the possibility? I understand the Torah took measures to see to it that it's only a person that already has it. Fine. But wouldn't it be better to just not have the whole thing altogether? There's got to be a reason for it. That was the question. So my first answer, my first answer was, let me think about it, but I said, look, you have to understand there's many factors that the master is undertaking a lot of responsibility over here. He has to take good care of him, he's giving him a situation, he has to take care of his wife and children, so he has to get some compensation as well. So the compensation that he gets is that he begets children and so forth. I said to him, let me just think about that. I was thinking about it afterwards, and that just didn't satisfy me. Because there's a problem over here. And that is, the Torah is doing something very, very unusual. It's removing something which is an Isser. And that you don't find. Because in order to have this phenomenon, the giving over of the wife, the Torah had to remove an Isser deal right. So the Torah is going out of its way. Normally, this woman is prohibited to him. The only case where you find that, the case you mentioned before, that's the case of the Apostolar, the captive woman, where the Torah did. And Rashi says, Zibatar connected Yetzirah. That a soldier in a time of war can't control his Yetzirah. The Losas of the Arises is marriage. By the way, you should realize what the Torah considers to be marrying a Gentile woman, not Kedusha. Living together as man and wife. You don't have to have a ceremony. They live together as man and wife. That's marriage. Outside the framework of marriage, it's prohibited. But there's no specific a biblical violation, because the biblical violation is actually to marry. But you mean just on a one-time basis, so to speak, to have relations with a Gentile woman. There's no specific biblical violation, but it's a serious issue. It is regarded as being extremely serious, because it's all tied in with idolatry. The whole purpose of it's just a formal issue. Okay. I said about the task I then set about to try and resolve, getting back to this conversation, was to try and explain what the underlying reason for the entire institution was. There are two factors that we must bear in mind. One is, as I said, that it's only if the person already has a wife. But then there's another factor that's very interesting. And that is, I told you before that a person can become an evidently in two ways. He stole, he couldn't pay back, or else he sold himself because of poverty. Now the halacha is that the only case in which he is allowed to give him the wife is only if he became a slave because he was sold. Because he was sold for stealing. But if he sold himself as a slave, even though he has the same status of being an eved ivri, then the master cannot give him the shifchat knas. That's a very important fact to bear in mind. The Rambam brings this down, lahalacha. The Rambam brings this down, and he makes it very clear. He lists the differences between one who sold himself because of poverty and one who was sold because of stealing. And he says that, that's what he says. That's right. If he was, he says like this, that one who sold himself is prohibited in the ship. No. However, one who was sold by Bezin, the master may give him the ship of Knanis. Now, that seems very, very strange. Because again, the either or question. If that's the halacha, is that part of the status? You see, if it's part of the status of being an Evet, so then what difference does it make how you became an Evet? Okay? That's what led me into a whole new direction. That's what led me. Happened to be studying the Rambam at the time. If you've ever studied the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, he talks about how one can improve their midah, their character traits. And it's the famous Rambam. It's also, by the way, if you have a copy of the Rambam, it's called the Shmona Prakim, the eight chapters. It's the Rambam's introduction to Pirkei Avos. And you can get them in English, they have translation. And in that, in one of the, I don't know which a chapter of the eight, he discusses the very same concept, the concept of basing your emotions and your behaviors in terms of the path of the middle ground, so to speak, the Derech HaEmtzoi, the path of moderation. You're familiar with the Rambam's famous concept? That was regard the Shvil HaZahav, right? The golden road, the golden mean. A great philosopher spoke about this as well. And that is, he says, that with regard to all the various emotions and instincts and passions, what is the proper road to take? What is the road of Torah? A person should always strive towards the midpoint, which is the point equally distant between either extreme. With regard to eating, the extreme of indulgence, overeating and indulgence, as opposed to the other extreme where a person hardly partakes of any enjoyment whatsoever, an ascetic type of thing. Rather, we should be in moderation. Moderation would be eating to be bottling, essentially for nutritional necessity, for health and so forth, and that's it. And the same is with regard to the sexual, with regard to every emotion, with regard to stinginess. A person should not go to the extreme of giving everything away, giving all of his possessions away, charity. On the other hand, he shouldn't be so stingy that he can't part with a nickel. Rather, again, he should live in accordance with moderation. Okay. Then he takes up a very interesting issue. The case of what he would call the diseased soul. And that is where a person has become fixated to an extreme. To the point where the very, he says, just like when a person is ill, so good food will taste bad to him. The idea of eating good food, but you can find that in our society, like the really nutritional food, when we're used to a unhealthy diet. Very salty, you know, in certain societies or certain cultures, very salty, whatever, and very fatty, whatever, greasy. So then something which is healthful or good fruit, you have no desire. He says, the same is true with regard to midos. A person can reach corruption that the good midah can be something which is very distasteful for him. Giving something away, an act of generosity, can be something which is distasteful and almost impossible for him to do it. And the bad, that which is we would look upon as being evil, like some perverse type of sexual activity. To him, that's the most attractive thing. So he says, the whole mechanism is distorted. So that person needs a refuah. So he says, what's the refuah? Of course, he says you have to go to the Chachamim. They are the Rofei HaNefesh, the healers of the soul, the Chachamim. And basically he says that if a person has become addicted to an extreme, it's a very modern kind of a system, as you'll see, we teach him to go to the other extreme. We do not allow him to go to the path of moderation, even though the extreme is a good doctrine of the Chachamim. That God has a covenant with the downtrodden. What's he telling us? What is the psychology? What is the defect? What is the defect of the individual who oppresses the weak? We'll use that term to include the widow and the orphan. And why is it, as I said before, it's a separate category. It's not the same as oppressing a fellow Jew, but worse, it's a totally different category. Why? Exactly. Why is he attracted to this particular bully? Why is the bully attracted to the weak? Yes? In his mind, it's a denial of God. Because he's saying this person, he wouldn't start up with a regular, he wouldn't start with somebody else, this kid has a father. If he knows, he starts up with this person, because he's going to tell his father, he has to deal with his father. Starts up with a woman, well, you take a first of all, now she doesn't want to take advantage of a woman who's weak, he'll take advantage, but then he's held back. She'll go tell her husband. He's afraid. But then he finds this woman who's a widow who has no husband. Now he feels a certain boldness, a certain confidence. That's fear. That's the denial of God. And he's saying that there is no God in the world, and the only thing he has to be afraid of is you and mine. That's why it's a completely different avera than oppressing another person. Oppressing another person is simply a defect. You have a defect, you're selfish, your ego, that's one thing. This is more than that. This is an individual who is denying the existence of God. He's saying there's nothing but you and Mike. And if I can find someone who has no human protector, then I'm home clear. That's very bad. Interestingly enough, that's what the halakha is, the difference between a ganav and a goslin. Right? It's really a ganav is a burglar who steals surreptitiously. And he has to pay a knas kefil. If he's caught, he has to pay kefil, double the amount, but he stole. The goslin is the mugger, the one who can punch you with force, with a gun. He has to pay back what he stole, but he doesn't have to pay. He doesn't have to pay the kefil. So his term, you would think he's worse. You would offer the mugger is worse, right? The burglar doesn't bother anybody. And I'll say no. Because the burglar is afraid of man. He sneaks in. He's afraid of being found out. He's not afraid of God. In the dark, when there's nobody around, he'll steal. The goslin, at least, is not afraid of man. He's not true, but he's not afraid of man. He's closer. He doesn't have... What?
The goslin is
different. In other words, he has denied God, but he does recognize human. He does recognize man. All right. The point that let's get back to the point here. All right. That explains. That's a very fascinating idea. Now we just have to try. That's not the same thing. The brachas and the terah, not the same thing as the.